are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It's Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. My name is Michael Brooks, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We're broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, the crew is here, minus the four-day workweek man, and we are covering the news. Will the hearing with Kavanaugh and his accuser happen? Looking unlikely. Dr. Ford correctly requesting an FBI investigation before this important moment, while Republicans on the committee say, no, we don't have time to investigate this, make sure that nobody accidentally perjures themselves or gets grilled or contradicts themselves or gets into trouble, because we care so much about the voices of women, we just can't wait. Hurricane Florence has pounded the Carolinas, killing several people, dozens of people, I believe. I don't have the number in front of me. And also unleashing mass environmental pollution in the form of basically just runoff from pig farms, dead animals. It's a really bad ongoing effect, right at the same time as the Trump administration is putting through more moves to deregulate that same sector of American agriculture. North Korean leader meets with the South Korean leader. They hug and pledge more work towards denuclearization, although the North Koreans are asking for reciprocal moves by the United States as the Korea crisis drama continues.
Sounds like a George Michael album.
It does sound like a George Michael album.
That's reciprocal moves.
It's a good... I thought North Korea drama was what you were going after. Continued civilian casualties in Idlib province in Syria, as a lot of people across the political spectrum seem unable to occupy multiple obvious perspectives on that one at the same time. And the United States coup-mongering in Venezuela, aligning with the far right, and Nicolas Maduro taking a break in Turkey to house some steak with Salt Bae. Not a good look. In fact, one of the worst looks in steak-related news. Fernando Haddad is surging in the polls as the Lula vote transfer starts. It's looking like Lula da Silva might literally win an election from a prison cell. All that and much, much more on today's Majority Report. The crew is here. Brendan Finn, fresh back from Texas, is in the co-commander chair.
Hey, everyone.
Are you in the right? I think you should be a bit more this way.
There you go.
That's good.
Good to see you, Brendan.
Thanks,
we miss you. Jamie is here. Jamie Peck.
Hello.
Matt Leck is here.
Hi.
We went late on TMBS last night. That was like a four-hour show.
It's lit when Alona comes in.
It does. Alona and I and the team have a very, very good time. A lot of diversions. Also, we went deep on the Rachel Maddow impressions, but we'll get to that later. But it was like there was a point in the show where every single person in the studio was... What was the crack? Everybody's crackling.
They have a sound effect of crumpling paper when they go to commercial. And Maddow does it herself, but they literally have an artificial one that they play.
I have an artificial... What was it? Blue Rachel Maddow? The real question is, was Stormy Daniels turned on? Okay. Try to lighten the mood, because there really is actually a lot of pretty depressing news to get to, but we will start in a... I don't know. This is very Trump. It's depressing, and it's disturbing, and it's very funny. This is Donald Trump talking about Florence, this horrible hurricane that people in the Carolinas are dealing with. And, well, just think of there's one specific term about water that you'll probably catch in this one.
I just want to thank all of the incredible men and women who have done such a great job in helping with Florence. This is a tough hurricane, one of the wettest we've ever seen from the standpoint of water. Rarely have we had an experience like it, and it certainly is not good. But the people of North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia, all of the areas affected, you've been incredible. There's been a loss of life, and may God be with them and their families. That's a tough one. It's tough to understand. But this has been a really difficult period of time for a lot of people. FEMA, the job you've done, the military, Coast Guard, what you've done in saving so many lives has been really something special. Law enforcement, always. Again, I just want to thank everybody for doing such a great job with a very difficult situation. Florence has been a nasty one, a big one, like that area certainly has never seen before. So the waters are still rising. Listen to your state and local authorities. Be patient, be alert, and God bless you.
It sounds like he's doing like shout outs in the end of after doing four fire verses.
You mean, well, yeah, but except not really. It sounds like he's doing shout out on like maybe a remix you don't care about and you're really high.
Do you want to hear a remix?
Yeah, I do.
You've been incredible. There's been a loss of life, and may God be with them and their families. That's a tough one. It's tough to understand, but this has been a really difficult period of time for a lot of people. FEMA, the job you've done, the military, Coast Guard, what you've done in saving so many lives has been really something special. Law enforcement, always.
Always.
Again, I just want to thank everybody for doing such a great job with a very difficult situation. Florence has been a nasty one.
You know what? The part that you're most right about in terms of the shout out after fire verses is like the way he says "and law enforcement" is the same way that a rapper says their city, like and Queensbridge, like, you know, like always. It's always like backed, like it's like, and of course Queensbridge, like you always go there. It's like, and law enforcement, of course we got to go we got to shout out law enforcement.
Law enforcement forever.
You know what's funny about this is an interesting Trump mode, because he's obviously, we know, like when he's raging or he's bloviating or he's like on a narcissistic high, but usually when he's like bored and disinterested he gets like really bitchy. But this is like he's bored obviously because he's just like, yeah, there's water and it's a lot, but he's sort of like, yeah, they voted for me, so I'll be like affably, like it's like a kid who can't be quiet somewhere but like in a non-temper tantrum way. It's like that's an interesting Trump mode when he's just like, yeah, I don't really give a fuck, but whatever. We love Carolina, and of course, oh yeah, yeah. Shouts to law enforcement. Lots of water.
He sounds like he's shilling Trump steaks when he's in this mode.
No,
like,
he's way more serious about Trump steaks than this.
Right.
Way more serious about Trump steaks.
Spend more time on the copy.
No, he's in funeral selfie mode right now.
That's yes. Funeral for like somebody
full
that,
funeral selfie
that he doesn't feel he needs to pretend that they died too much.
So yesterday he went on Twitter saying, right now everybody is saying what a great job we are doing with Hurricane Florence, and they are 100% correct, but don't be fooled. At some point in the near future the Democrats will start ranting. That mic's in the way.
That's great.
That FEMA, our military, and our first responders, who are all unbelievable. I don't know if that unbelievable means what he thinks of
his
are a disaster and not doing a good job. This will be a total lie, but that's what they do, and everybody knows it! Exclamation
point. Always the exclamation point. We'll get to the serious note of this for a second, and I'm quoting now from the Raleigh Observer. And do we actually, Brendan, would you mind looking up the amount of people? I don't want to feel like we're glossing over.
The death count's at 32, according to The Guardian.
Okay, so already, obviously, this is already a terrible event, and A lot of people have lost their lives. And it's going to take a lot in a lot of ways to get out from this. But this specifically is actually a really serious problem from a public health environmental perspective. The Raleigh News and Observer says the number of hogs and poultry killed in Hurricane Florence flooding has already doubled the casualties from Matthew in 2016, and the losses are expected to mount this week as new information comes from farmers as they gain access to their properties. And basically, the hog lagoons pose, and I'm continuing to quote, hog lagoons are literally fecal matter and runoff from these, you know, these torture cages that they keep pigs in, which even for those of us, I don't eat pork products, but I'm not a vegetarian. But I would say that, like, the condition that these animals are held in should be a strong moral objection for everybody, including people who aren't vegetarians or vegans. I mean, it's just obscene, savage cruelty. And there's a lot of movements actually from the industry to attempt to criminalize reporting and exposure of their abuses across the board, in this case, pigs. So basically, these pigs are kept in these torture cages. They aren't they don't move. They have very little air. They're fed a terrible diet. They're pumped out and they're murdered. And basically, their waste is in these lagoons. And I think is this actually a picture of what we're talking about?
It's a picture,
about?
Yeah.
This is a lagoon to give you the sense of the scope and the size. That is, and you know, pardon my language, but this is literally like a pig shit lake.
Well, right? This isn't technically the pig shit lake.
Well, this is not the pig
this
shit.
This is where the pigs live, and it's you can see they drowned in those
things. They drown. Okay, but where are the lagoons?
I can look for a lagoon.
Oh, okay, I understand. This is the cages where they've drowned. Okay, yeah. Okay, got it. And obviously, the rotting corpses of all these animals is a major problem in and of itself for things like E. coli. But these lagoons of waste, which already pose serious threats to local waterways and soil erosion and things like that on a good day, are amplified in this crisis situation. Hog lagoons pose an environmental contamination risk because swine feces and urine contain bacteria pathogens, including Salmonella, E. coli, and fecal coliform. Hog lagoons are the most common way. That's the brown thing. That literally is it. Yeah. So take a look at this. This is on a mass industrial scale. This is the way we do farming in this country and in any industrialized country with no regulations on this thing. Hog lagoons are the most common way farmers process pig waste, a treatment system in which microorganisms break down waste matters into nutrients and byproducts that can be used as fertilizer. However, the public health risk from hog lagoons, and it goes on. Now, this is all happening at the same time that the Trump administration is moving forward new moves to weaken protections around chemical plants. Since it made rainfall, now I'm quoting from The Hill, since it made rainfall, Florence continues to wreak havoc. The storm was attempted to drop 18 trillion gallons of rain over the course of a week, enough to fill the Chesapeake Bay. That can mean a flooding at more than 1,000 sites in the storm's path where toxic chemicals are used or stored. If these facilities are damaged, they could release chemicals that threaten public health and the environment. Why, then, is the Trump administration's EPA seeking to weaken regulation aimed at preventing this exact kind of disaster across the country? More than 2,500 toxic chemical waste sites are located in areas at high risk of flooding. The changing climate makes floods more likely. Those risks will only grow. That's why the U.S. Chemical Safety Board and independent federal investigators urge companies, emergency planners, and regulators to assess the chemical industry's preparedness for hurricane floods. Despite these risks, the Trump EPA is currently working to gut the risk management program rule. So the answer we all know is obvious, of course, which is that all of the Republican Party is purely a subsidiary of any corporate interest in America. And also, as with all of these other longstanding problems we're dealing with, these policies were not addressed and in many cases expedited and supported by Democratic politicians who also receive significant campaign contributions from the agriculture industry. So, and I think that's also useful, like, When a tragedy, you know, something strikes that is, you know, that's like a hurricane, so we could obviously probably connect it to the climate crisis. I think, you know, I don't know. There is like, though, that kind of like disaster porn phenomenon and the weather guys with their, you know, rain jackets and everything. And it's like, look, I think obviously people should donate to credible and legitimate sources for mutual aid and relief to help people there. And then the other value is to cover these stories in such a way that they expose the structural issues that they go to the heart of. And we literally have this incredible timing of another relentless storm that is going to pose huge environmental and public health implications. And, of course, the Trump administration is and the Republican Party are planning a whole lot more for us.
Do we know what happened to the people in the prison that was not going to be evacuated?
I know some people drowned. I don't know if that's in the prison.
Jesus Christ.
Well, that's not in the prison. That was in a van. And apparently people inside the van were still locked inside. I should look for the story. But
yeah, we need to
two
find
prisoners
that story.
Did die. But I didn't know. I don't know what actually happened to
they
that prison.
They wouldn't release the prisoners?
No. I'll look that up here.
Yeah, I don't know that story. That's disgusting and not surprising. If you like, and actually, seriously, I mean, this is, it always makes sense, but this is really quite appropriate, so I'll start it now. If you like the stories you hear on our show, you'll like the Sierra Club's new storytelling podcast, The Land I Trust. Season 2 of The Land I Trust Now is out now, bringing you storytellers from across the Western U.S. who share their experiences in harvesting, protecting, and living with our four natural elements, water, fire, wind, and air. The series has 14 tales of individuals across the western part of the country as they share their tales of climate change, clean energy, and everything in between. Each year, the Sierra Club visits a different region of the country for a new set of stories. Season 1, stories from the American South, talk to musicians, families, farmers, and climate refugees, helping to move the South from coal ash pollution to a brighter, cleaner future. You can listen to The Land I Trust at beyondcoal.org/stories. That's beyondcoal.org/stories or an Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Check out season 2 of The Land I Trust today. Quite appropriate.
This is what I was
referring to. Okay, go ahead.
So this is Brianna Sachs. Two female mental health patients drowned in South Carolina after floodwaters overtook their jail transport van. The Horry County deputies driving the vehicle tried to rescue them, but local media says they were chained in the back.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be follow-up yet on the prisons that were.
And so the prisons literally were not evacuated.
Yeah.
They were like, you're just going to ride this out in here.
And the staff, yeah.
Yeah, there was a huge public
and the staff.
Outcry.
That actually should be a lesson for some people.
No, they did evacuate the officers, I believe.
Yeah.
There was a huge public outcry about it, and they're like, you know what? It's safest not to evacuate them, which is fucking horrible.
I mean, both of these things are very central to what's gone wrong in America. The factory farming and the prison stuff, right? Like, that's the thing to focus on when these sorts of disasters hit, is where are we most vulnerable? What sort of awful monstrosity is going to get people killed that we've just been allowing to like sit in our backyards for years?
That's exactly right. Talk about this will have implications for these types of events and issues we're talking about, because everything from prisons to the ability to reverse the just all-consuming ecological crisis, a lot of it is going to depend on the courts. And the Republicans have been packing the courts for quite some time. There's obviously a much needed broader left strategy for the court. But now we find ourselves in the midst of this Kavanaugh drama, which, as we were covering last night on TMBS, we really wanted to sort of run that parallel history of what happened in 1991 with Anita Hill and Clarence Thomas, and just the overarching reality of there's been some small steps, there's actually been potentially some back steps, and also that if Kavanaugh is confirmed, and I actually think they might be getting ready to throw this guy over and they could still get a person on the court, even if they do pretty easily, you will have two people who have been, I'll put it this way, exceedingly credibly alleged to have engaged in, I'm not going to say, I don't like the phrase sexual misconduct, an attempted sexual assault and sexual harassment, to be really specific. You will have two of nine justices making cases, setting law in a completely democratically unaccountable fashion. This is the only moment in a justice's career cycle where they have any type of public accountability. They might choose to do TV interviews. Antonin Scalia, who was, of course, a reactionary and just a thug of the worst order, I will say the one thing I will give him, he was a frequent speaker on college campuses and sort of generally made himself, relatively speaking, more available to be argued with. But that's completely at his discretion. There's no democratic, very little democratic accountability for these people. And if there was, Clarence Thomas certainly would have been impeached and removed. The conflicts of interest with his far-right political operative wife alone mean he should not be on the court. The tide might be changing, though, on Kavanaugh. There's a couple of things. Sam pointed this out to me yesterday. I don't remember whether it was something he noted or somebody else, so forgive me, but he was talking to me after the show. The B team is out to defend Kavanaugh on TV, at least in the last couple of days. You're seeing a lot of kind of like pundit types and other sort of like right-wing hacks. You're not seeing a lot of, you know, frontline politicians. You're not seeing a lot of doubling down from the Judiciary Committee. You're even, of course, seeing the kind of usual ambiguous statements from even someone like Lindsey Graham. And now we have Donald Trump adding his ambiguity to the mix. And my only read of this is just that all he cares about, obviously, is this winning and losing perception and protecting his own ass. And it seems to me, I mean, look, Trump just says stuff, so you can't read that much in some ways, but it seems to me that he wouldn't be hinting at this or saying this if he didn't have a sense of maybe this guy's a loser and it's time to pull the plug.
Hopefully, the woman will come forward, state her case. He will state his case before representatives of the United States Senate, and then they will vote. They will look at his career. They will look at what she had to say from 36 years ago, and we will see what happens. But I just think he is at a level that we rarely see, not only in government, anywhere in life.
I just want to really underscore, and of course he's still supporting Kavanaugh, but I think especially by Trump standards, even just the saying, and of course, please, there is no praise for Trump in this. But even him just saying she should be heard would not be what I'd expect to hear from him if he's mobbing up for Kavanaugh. The other thing is, and I keep making this point, if he is lying today, which I think he is, we don't know he is, I think he is, I believe her, I don't believe him in this instance, certainly, then it's a live issue today because he's lying about it. If the dude came out at the beginning of his hearings and he said, 35 years ago, I did X, this is on the table, never did anything else like it, I apologize, so on, blah, blah, blah. To be honest with you, I'm not going to lie. I'm mercenary, and I think there's far more important things of just getting this guy to not be on the court. So I might still say, screw him. But not because I don't buy the principle of people having redemption and nobody being defined by one event in their lives. And as I, of course, this isn't going to go anywhere, but obviously I welcome Republicans to the newfound principle that people's teenage conduct should not destroy their lives. It seems to only apply when it's, well, let's actually be really specific, not just a white guy, but a far right white guy who's about to get a Supreme Court seat to lock in 21st century feudalism. That's when all of a sudden we can look past childish indiscretions. We have people on sex offender registries that they can't get off of for life because they might have been 18 and slept with a 16-year-old. Okay, like we have 13-year-olds who might have committed a really terrible crime serving life sentences with adults. And I don't hear a mumbling word, as Cornel West would say, about any of those things from these people. But that being said, he didn't do that. He's denying it. And there's an exceedingly credible allegation against him and a bizarre weirdo freak friend of his who was also involved supposedly in the incident, allegedly in the incident, who we should also hear more from. So every day he denies it and she says it's so is a day that it's happening now. So that's we can dismiss that talking point quite easily.
Well, the thing to watch with Trump saying she should be heard and any of these Republicans is they want her to go under oath before the investigation happens, mm-hmm. the FBI investigation.
Right.
Which basically means, like, she's not going to have the benefit of the FBI coming saying, okay, we established this party was here and then, right? It was a long time ago. The way that that process would have went is, yeah, they talk about it and they interview some people and then they lay out the facts. But the Republicans want to play this game where if she messes up one of the metadata details, like what, why did you go to this party? Who was throwing the party? Right?
They can use it. And we played it. And this was Joe Biden's big failure, right? Like those Republicans gutted Anita Hill. And some of the things that they did, they couldn't in the popular media environment. They couldn't do as easily today, right? Like asking her like, oh, well, aren't you just upset about your own dating life? And that's why you're going after Judge Thomas, this type of thing. But also, and we'll play Anita Hill in a second, but also even if she is telling the truth, I mean, I don't know if this is what they do, but I mean, even she could be telling the truth in all of the kind of correct broad strokes. They could you could probably walk anybody into a perjury charge talking about something that happened 35 years ago if you asked the right set of questions and got them to misidentify the right details and then had a retroactive
and the insinuations about her motivations are just ridiculous because right. She didn't choose how this played out, right? From her perspective, she might have just said, like, well, this happened to me. I'm going to report this to a senator because what happens if there's more reports of this, right? Like, she
and
has
from
no
all
idea how
intents
this,
and purposes, that's actually
what she did.
That's what she did. That's the only rational read of it.
Not to mention trauma, particularly sexual trauma, affects the memory. Like, this has been shown. So it's pretty unfair to expect her to remember every single detail. And it's also pretty fucked up the way an assailant can simultaneously assault someone and then render them an unreliable witness to their own life.
Well, there's also the argument that Republicans are playing this and that it is in good faith and they want her to talk. And they've said, well, maybe we'll have our female staffers question her instead of 11 or however many white guys that are Republicans. And Bob Corker even said, Republicans extended a hand in good faith. If we don't hear from both sides on Monday, let's vote. And that's like your resistance, Republican.
Well, of course, because we all know that they're full of it. And we all know that this is exactly the type of disingenuous fig leaf thing they play. And by the way, I don't know how people read it. But I actually, look, again, it is structurally a problem, the makeup of that Judiciary Committee, racially and gender-wise, and what that reflects about America. But I actually find the specific offer unbelievably condescending and infantilizing
insulting.
To women. Like, that's ridiculous. I don't like that essentialist nonsense from anybody. Period. And the fact that they think that they're making don't worry, dear. We'll have women talk to you.
Unelected
women. That's disgusting. That's disgusting.
They're unelected, but they are women. So
they're unelected. We'll talk. Oh, no. Oh, I know. Well, that will trigger. No, what's going to upset anybody is that you're there basically trying to destroy her in national press because, you know, she came forward. And might jeopardize your politics. What is this clip that you put up? I don't.
Which one?
Oh, sorry. The one. Oh, that's Barry Weiss. Okay. Let's go to Anita Hill. This is Anita Hill. And we spent a lot of time on this last night on TMBS. Look, of course, I think that, you know, there's a political relevance to this. I think there's political relevance to the fact that Joe Biden was literally like a credit card senator in the sense that the credit card industry wrote the bankruptcy bill that he pushed through, I believe, in 2005, which is unbelievably harmful to working and middle class people. And that actually one of the first major exposures Elizabeth Warren had was writing and advocating against that bankruptcy bill that Joe Biden pushed through. I get it. He's a likable guy. I will totally vote for him over Donald Trump. But people need to actually be quite serious about this record because he's going to frame himself as a major advocate of women. And I want to say that first there's the question with regards to his conduct with the Anita Hill hearings. And then I have to say, yes, I have no doubt that the provisions he put in the crime bill, probably, I don't know enough, but I'm willing to say I'm sure that they contain some very helpful and important provisions to protect women, particularly in issues of domestic violence. But it also was in the context of the mass incarceration crime bill, which we all rightfully recognize was a massive expansion of the carceral state and a huge problem. So even Biden's sort of feminism is connected with prison industrial complex. And if we can't get out of that, then we're not going to get out of any kind of fundamental justice, you know, where we need to go in terms of these issues.
Joe Biden, carceral feminist.
Joe Biden, carceral feminist. This is Anita Hill talking with Ari Melber.
No, he's introducing.
Oh, excuse me. She's not with him, though?
No, it's an interview that he's teasing.
Okay, this is Ari Melber teasing an interview with Anita Hill. And she, but there is her in this clip,
yes,
talking. Okay. And she talks about her experience of the and Biden in those hearings.
Democrat chairing that committee, though, Joe Biden, who has gone on to apologize for his approach to Anita Hill. And she reflects on that in a newly released, never before aired interview.
I think Chairman Biden really believed that he was acting in a way that was fair to the nominee. And in doing so, I think he completely underestimated that, in fact, he was deferring to power and to the power of the White House and to the power of his colleagues. And what that meant was that I would suffer because I didn't have all of those people behind me.
That's exactly right. And I said I would invite. We were able to play a little bit of it last night, but there's a lot you can go into of the type of attacks that particularly an Orrin Hatch or an Arlen Specter waged at Anita Hill. They're playing it a bit differently now, although as we've already, you know, established, where does that list of 65 women come from? What's that about? And then also when it's pressed, I believe, what is the latest standing count? Is about 5 women stand by that original list?
As of yesterday, it was 5. It might be more now.
Might
be
a bit more.
They knew that this was coming for a long time.
And they knew it was coming. And they were, yeah, they knew and he knew. And what we have is we basically, I mean, we have unaccountable power in the form of Judge Kavanaugh, and not just with this. I want to know more about this guy's gambling stories. I want to know more about this guy's former boss and mentor who had to leave his seat because of actually a similar sexual harassment scandal to what Clarence Thomas was accused of. I want to know about this. I want to know, and I'll make this point really briefly. It's not because his friend wrote novels about drinking and having sex. That is not the issue. The issue is that he wrote, first of all, implying that there was a culture of blackouts and other things that might, in a narrow sense, shed specific light on the incident that he and Kavanaugh are accused of doing in this very credible way. And also, this guy's whole bizarreness in sexual politics, wrote a column for the Daily Caller calling Barack Obama the first woman president. Yes. Mark Judge is a weirdo. Mark Judge is trying to fuse together some type of sort of latent midlife Catholic spiritual crisis and arch reactionary teachings with his sort of self-concept as some type of Kango hat hedonist. And that type of weird sexist shit and whatever kind of insecurities or whatever, I don't know the best language to do it, to describe it. That is on a continuum from a dude who will go on the Supreme Court, and even if they don't specifically overturn Roe v. Wade, they will vastly curtail it. They will be a consistent vote to harm women's health, women's rights, women's democratic participation in every category. And just in an embarrassing, I mean, like, just even think, like, it's just embarrassing. that you have a population that wants to infantilize the other half of the population and then also have sex with them. It's embarrassing.
Wait, you don't like to have sex with children?
No, I don't. And maybe we're in that sense, all of the men here are like women podcasters. I guess that's actually what soy boy means. You don't have sex with children. I mean, it is bizarre. If you look at the stories of Judge Kavanaugh, you look at the politics of the Republicans on that Judiciary Committee, going back to Judge Thomas, the relentless attacks on Anita Hill. And frankly, I guess she snapped to it, but the other through line of Joe Biden to Dianne Feinstein. And now we know what their agenda for the court is. We know it. This isn't a mystery to anybody. And then the ancillary weird, like sort of, I don't even know, maybe a Quentin Tarantino character, though that's probably giving him too much credit, is this bizarre guy who writes columns for the Daily Caller about Barack Obama being a chick. I mean, yo, I cannot imagine a greater time for a political, judicial, moral, and cultural inventory. And not of a cry and drink apple cider variety. Let's talk about, or don't drink apple cider, excuse me, that'll be the ruin of you. And speaking of that, let's really get to what's unfair. We'll do Barry Weiss in the fun half. Because I want to get to this because, you know, Greg Gutfeld's a nothing. He's not funny insofar as I could ever see. And I think I'm pretty good about acknowledging even loathsome people being funny. I think I'm a pretty straight shooter on that. Greg Gutfeld's not funny. His presence of any kind is a mystery to me.
He's the in-house eyebrow raiser.
And just think of the language of unfairness here. It's one thing to say, let's pretend we're all like rugged fascists and life isn't fair and life's just hierarchies and you either are or you aren't and go fuck yourself. Okay, I want to defeat that political project and we will, but just cap that language. Don't be talking about people's lives being hurt if this is your attitude. Watch Greg Gutfeld discover victimization in the most perverse way imaginable.
Get rid of courts. This is about winning for a party at any cost. And the cost is perhaps ruining a life. I saw a headline, I won't say where it's from, that said, the headline was this: are Republicans really going to nominate an accused rapist to overturn Roe?
Pause.
Okay,
it.
So.
Yes, they actually did. They've nominated him. So he has been nominated. So not only is that headline correct, the only part of that headline is wrong is that it happened, unless he's reading a headline that was before the nomination.
Main thing, yeah, the other thing wrong with it is like it's a dumb question because obviously they would.
It's both wrong, dumb, and obviously, which we could call we could change the name of the 5-2. Go ahead.
Okay, so think about, I would ask the people on both sides, imagine if this was your son, dad, or brother. We often think about, you know, victims, but would you characterize this as fair with the knowledge that we have right now? Is it fair to characterize somebody that way if that is your husband, your brother, your son, or your father? And I think sometimes, well, all the time in politics, we don't think that way, and we will ruin somebody's life just so we can get somebody on the court.
Well, okay, so this is so stupid in so many ways. First of all, these people are not your brother or your uncle or your friend. They're somebody who's going to get an appointment for life to a completely a very undemocratically accountable branch of government and make policy about everything from healthcare to the environment to voting rights, to really to the future of privacy in a tech transparency age.
Yeah, like they literally have the power of life or death over millions of people.
Right. Literally. This isn't your uncle saying, hey, I caught a charge that's wrong. Can you help me out? In fact, your uncle that's getting falsely accused, let's just follow the logic of this, okay? Say your uncle or your brother caught a false charge on something. The thing that he might have to worry about would be of someone like Judge Kavanaugh ruling that even though DNA testing has cleared him up, he still has to stay in jail on a technicality. which is the type of way Justice Scalia ruled on things, and all of the other fascistic thugs that these idiots want to put into the courts and are putting in the courts. So this isn't your friend. This is somebody whose life, who has, as you say, wields enormous power over us. Secondly, life ruined? No, a life ruined is all of the criminal justice policies that all of the politicians that you vote for and put into office, Democrat and Republican, have voted for across the board, for mandatory minimums, nonviolent drug offenders, non-rehabilitation for young offenders for any crime, across the board.
Well, for
that's a ruined life. Judge Kavanaugh goes back to another court and writes some bitch-ass memoir whining about how unfairly he was treated and does the circuit and is still a millionaire.
Well, it's the same shit as always, right? Like, it really speaks to the privilege that these people have, that losing any amount of their position or power over others amounts to ruining their lives.
That is, all of us, I'm assuming, in this room have had opportunities that we would all have considered, maybe actually in retrospect, at least in my case, I'm not going to spell out what I'm thinking of. I'm glad some of these things didn't happen. But at the time, say you were up for something which you perceived of as a big, like, lateral step, right? And actually, you're dealing with a lot more problems than Judge Kavanaugh is dealing with, okay? But, you're still relatively...
I don't know. Do you know about gambling debts?
Yeah, that is true. Like, so, Judge... Are you going to be on the Supreme Court? I know. Because the horses don't like you.
The Schrico case.
The Schrico case, because I thought you were, and now all of a sudden you did this disgusting thing with some broad in high school. It doesn't look like you're going to rule the right way anymore. That actually would be a very cool ending to the story. But that being said, I've never perceived those events, which actually had, at least on a personal level, higher stakes in terms of like things like income, which actually really matter and are more material than any of this. But, like, they didn't ruin your life. The guy might not get to be one of the 9 most powerful people on Earth.
A thing nobody should really be.
Right.
Like, the Supreme Court should be term limited.
Yeah, the Supreme Court needs to be term limited to begin with. And he might not join this radically dangerous institution and have yet even more power in what has already been an unbelievably easy life.
There's no accountability for any of these people ever. And, I went to school with some of them, so I know, and I've seen it. God, I can't stop thinking about that weird email that he sent about the weekend that he had with his friends.
We did that one
the other day, right?
I don't even remember that
like,
one.
Like, at the end, it's weird all the way through, but at the end it's like, and, everybody I expect will exercise discretion about what we did this weekend, even with spouses. And I was like, okay, if they were just having sex with prostitutes, it would be especially spouses. But like, even spouses, it's like, did you kill a prostitute? Like, what the fuck?
Well, that would be funny. Even it's like, all right, and as much as I know you want to tell your wife, don't tell her that we killed hookers over the weekend, all right? Just keep your mouth shut. What happened? What is this?
Mark Judge's Facebook.
This is Mark Judge's Facebook. This is Mark Judge's Facebook.
So Mark Judge takes a picture of four scantily clad ladies at a pool. Writes,
I like the duck face on the one on the right. She's real. That's like vintage. You don't see that anymore.
Well, this is 2012.
No, I was going to say that went out of culture. I feel like that was like 12 to 14, and all of a sudden it stopped. I'm like the only one who still does duck faces on Instagram.
And here we see your synthesis of the Catholicism and the lust, because summer, God is good, and it's some women bikinis.
I think I rest my case.
Two likes, but he got some comments. So he commented first. He says, attraction is not disordered, lust is. And then somebody comments on, says, these can be your daughters, Judge. And Mark says, I know. As much as you will call BS on this, as a journalist and photographer, you look for something beautiful and dynamic like this. Trust me, I know my place, LOL.
He's like one of those people who gets sober and then thinks that he doesn't have to do any other work on himself at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good point. No, I know exactly what personality type you're talking about. That's exactly right. It's just like, ever since I quit drinking, anyway.
Wait, is he sober?
I don't know if he's sober.
He wrote a memoir about it.
Yeah, didn't he write it? Wasn't that? Yeah.
Like, Russell Brand talks about this a lot.
Yeah, Russell Brand used his recovery to open up his horizons, not to like just repeat the same stuff over and over. Not to in any way minimize anybody going through that, but I think, yes, you're talking, or they transferred on other things like, you know, George Bush and like, I mean, some of the same temperamental, you know, tendencies persist, right? All right, guys, we're going to go to the fun half where we will take your calls. We will take your IMs, which are already open. And we will talk about Barry Weiss.
By the way, can
put
I just
me in
say,
even more of a sour mood.
One more point. If you search Mark Judge Facebook on Twitter, there's some weird pictures that come up. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
the
a
guy,
very, very,
the guy
weird person.
Is a weirdo. Okay.
Really weird.
He's really weird. And so
no, they're all like into this Yellow King Opus Dei shit.
Really weird.
Like, we know what happens at those all boys boarding schools.
Not good.
It's not healthy.
It's definitely not healthy. Become
public
a member
school, baby.
Just don't even go. Become a member of the Majority Report today. majority.fm/become a member. It's how this show stays alive. It's how we are accountable to nobody but you. And of course, that is the best way to do things. If you ever get into a conversation with other people in the field or even other people outside of it, they're like, they are pretty, I mean, now I think it's a little bit more known with like Patreon and stuff, but there still is a lot of, I mean, just understandable envy. Like, wow, like you don't have some like capricious corporation, like, minding you, not supporting the content that needs to be done.
Tim
like,
Carney was trying to get somebody in trouble on Twitter, and he said, like, this person is followed by a lot of people in left media, right? As if, like, you know, Mother Jones should fire somebody for following this guy.
Right.
And it's nice to be able to just reply to that, being like, I think the tweet was good. Try to get me fired.
Right. Exactly. I actually thought that was a pretty good point about another way that we should be asking questions about Judge Kavanaugh, and you, Tim Carney, probably have to go back to some overlord who's minding you. We will go back to our independent platform that is supported by a large community of people that we're accountable to, which is obviously by far the best way to go. So majority.fm/become a member. The Michael Brooks Show is also very much the same deal. It's actually 100% the same deal. Majority Report is over 90%. Michael Brooks Show is 100%. This weekend on the Illicit History series, part two with Joshua Kahn, who's an organizer in Cali, and we're talking specifically about a global strategy for climate action. He's worked everywhere on this issue, from the Philippines to Colombia to Arizona. And last night, Ilona Minkowski and I did the sort of parallel tracks of Anita Hill, Brett Kavanaugh, and actually, we both told some pretty embarrassing stories about ourselves. In fact, there's a high entertainment value, as there always is on TMBS. And we're getting our legs as we close in on that next 2,000 patrons. I talked last night about some of the new offerings that we're cooking up as well. So patreon.com/TMBS. Also, you can go to Michael Brooks Show on YouTube or subscribe on iTunes. Jamie.
Yeah, so this week on the Antifada, we had on the writer David Kleon, very smart guy.
Smart guy.
Talked about...
Nice guy. Smart
guy. Talked
guy.
About how the left should approach the Russia story. We talked about... God, I'm so tired. He told a very funny, embarrassing story about Barry Weiss, actually, how she got... I mean, she gets caught lying a lot, but this time she got caught lying about apologizing to someone when she didn't, which was pretty amusing.
Barry Weiss is such a schmuckle.
Yeah, no, she's...
Every time I see her, I just want to make up fake Yiddish insults.
What's the female version of a schlemiel?
Schlemiel.
I don't know if there is one.
Schlemiel-y. I don't know.
She's schlemiela.
Schlemiela. Dude. Barry Weiss is a schlemiela. I like that.
Thank you.
Nice.
So anyway.
That's exactly right, too.
All that and more on this week's Antifada, which is coming out tomorrow. And you can check it out at patreon.com/theantifada, youtube.com/theantifada, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you drink? Do you read literature? Does one synthesize those things, Matlack?
Yeah, literary hangover. I do those things. We did the Scarlet Letter. We actually did have beers nice. And talked about Scarlet Letter. Me, Alex, and Kara. Yeah, check that out. I'm also 5 patrons away from triple figures on Patreon. And
oh, all of a sudden, you do want the board up, huh?
And and when I get to 100, I'm going to be an audiobook narrator, and I'm.
I was going to say I could see it, but I could hear it. Nah.
Yeah, people will be able to hear it, and maybe they'll see it. Maybe I'll do some periscoping. I don't know. I'm not going to overpromise here, but yeah, I'm going to be doing a Hope Leslie and a novel called The Quaker City by George Lippard. So if you want to hear me read audiobooks, become a patron today, and you'll be able to hear those soon.
You hear that, folks? Matt Leck will read you a bedtime story.
Exactly.
See, Brendan, I'm always pitching the Jerry's Dead, Fish Sucks, Get a Job Patreon experience with you, but...
Maybe when Michael reads some sort of plateau, I'll give like a Ezra Klein type explainer on the interplay of jam band origins in America or something. I don't know. We'll see. There'll be a Brendan Finn project eventually because, you know, there has to be.
There has to be. All right. We're going to see everybody on the fun half.
I feel I have to get the gushing out first.
I think the day I talked to Sam was like the worst day of my life.